how will we be generous? Join us this fall at Revolution Church as we explore generosity and sow for the harvest.
Hey, friends. How was your week? Woohoo! All right. Good deal. I hope everybody had a good week. We start a new teaching series today. If you're a guest, it's a great Sunday to be here. We are glad that you are here, and pray you recognize God's abundant blessings in your life and go and share that with somebody this week. Our new teaching series is called Generosity, and we are going to be looking at, for the next 5 weeks, one passage of Scripture. So I imagine you can look at that one of two ways, because life is much about perspective. You can either say, oh my goodness, are we ever going to be through the Scripture? Or, as we would prefer, you're going to say, I am a resident expert on the parable of the vineyard. Clearly, I can tell you're excited. All right, then. Let's go ahead and open it up to Matthew chapter 20. We'll look at verses 1 through 16, and let's read it with some chutzpah. Here we go. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "Friend, I am not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. I want to remind you that you can follow along using your Revolution app. And we're going to get back to the beginning there. Yeah, let's go to the next one. There we go. You can use your Revolution app and follow along. If you want the app to connect not only with our teaching and latest events, you can text Revo app yes to the number 22333. You know, as we kick off this teaching series, I was thinking about a couple of different stories that I experienced with this issue of generosity. One of them was a good friend who runs a business. And this gentleman had a worker come to him in the afternoon one day, and she said, "I'm sorry, I'm going to have to quit my job." Now, she was a good worker. She showed up on time, you know, hardworking, this sort of thing, the kind of worker you want to hold on to. And he said, "What's wrong? Are you upset? Has somebody treated you wrongly? Did you get a better offer somewhere else? What's going on?" And she said, "No, I have to leave because if I continue to work here, I'm going to lose my government checks. And my government checks pay the bills, and you don't." And he didn't really know what to do with that. So the woman left. And I'm also reminded of a story that I lived and experienced around, we'll call it 2000, 2001, in the height of the booming United States economy, when people are making all kinds of money hand over fist. You put money in a some kind of stock, and it doesn't matter what it is, and you end up with $1,000 the next day if you put a dollar in the day before. Life's great. My client comes to me and says, "Hey, Brian, it's time to pay out bonuses for the year end." And I said, "Well, that's great. That's good news. That means you've got money left. That means you're doing well." And he said, "Yeah, it's been a great year. And I'm going to pay out some six-figure bonuses. I'm going to pay out one seven-figure bonus." And he's talking about how he's going to use his bonus to buy his third or fourth vacation home, which that's fine. It's his business. He has the right to do that. And he's got money left over. And he says, "I wonder what I should do with that." And I said, well, what about your factory labor? Will you pay them a bonus? And he says, nah, they're good. And I thought, You know, I tell you two different stories, both from different sides of the spectrum. And both illustrate the same issue that we've been talking about in our culture today. And we've been talking about it, quite frankly, for the last 3,000 years of recorded human history. The issue we've termed it these days is the word fairness. It's not a new issue, it's a very old issue. And it's been exacerbated in many ways, not only from Wall Street to Pennsylvania Avenue to Market and Main here in Louisville, by social media. And we read these stories, we hear these stories all the time, and I suspect on one side or the other, these stories leave us somewhat unsettled, or if we're going to be honest with ourselves, the word would probably be angry. So, welcome to a new teaching series. Glad you're here. You know, for the next 5 weeks, we're going to study this passage on the parable of the generous landowner. And really what I want to drive at here from the very beginning of the teaching series is that we're not talking about capitalism, we're not talking about socialism, we're talking about something I'm going to call kingdom economics. And kingdom economics takes into consideration a different perspective. See, I think culture looks at fairness because of the principle of scarcity. Well, what's scarcity, Brian? Scarcity means that there are only a certain number of resources, we're all fighting over them. I feel like you got more of those resources and I got less. That's not fair. Where the kingdom looks at generosity because of the principle of abundance. Now, if we think about God, would we say that God is an abundant God? Do you think that there's nothing God can do? I mean, seriously, it's God. God has everything. God has all the resources of the universe and infinitely more at his fingertips. And so if we look at the principle of abundance, that God has all that is possible, all the infinite possible resources in the world, that he's made some of those available to us, maybe it calls us to do something with those resources. And I assure you that the two are in competition because of something that's called perspective. When you look at the world, do you look at it through the lens of scarcity or through the lens of abundance? Do you think that you have little or do you have plenty? Now, I want us to recognize at the forefront of this teaching series that there are indeed people living in this country who don't have enough. They don't. That's the reality of the situation. And maybe we can do something about that. But for the most part, if you were to take stock of your own life, I imagine you would recognize, if you're honest, we're living in the richest country in the world. The reality is you have plenty. Now, you might want more, but I guarantee you that for the majority of us, we don't need more. Now, we use the word need because it's driven by all kinds of marketing and consumeristic messages and this principle of scarcity. You have more, I want more, therefore I need more because you have more and things aren't fair. But that's not the way that life works. As a good friend of mine once said, the fair is a place that pigs are judged. And not all of life is fair. And at the issue, at the heart of generosity is really a heart issue. If we begin to recognize that God provides us with everything that we could ever possibly need, maybe we can use these resources that God has given us to go beyond ourselves and to provide for the one who really is in need. And so the wisdom from a vineyard really causes us to begin with this question. Do we really have scarcity of resources? Or are there plenty of resources to go around? Because mark my words, how you look at the world, what lens you view it through abundance or scarcity, will very much affect the condition of your heart. You want to find yourself to be an angry human being, you'll constantly be asking yourself the question, why do they have more and I have less? It's not fair. And if you want to be a person that's filled with joy, You want to be a person who's ready to share out of the abundance God has given them? You'll look at it that you have plenty. That God's already provided that which you need. Sure, you could want more. There's things that I want. But do I really need them? I doubt it. I doubt it. You want to watch the world change? Be generous, as God is generous. That's what we're going to be challenged to look at. Let's take this opportunity. We'll dismiss our kids to Revolution Kids Church.
In my own little world, it hardly ever rains. I've never gone hungry, always felt safe. I got some money in my pocket, shoes on my feet. In my own little world, population, me. I try to stay awake till the Sunday morning.
All right, I want to paint a picture for you here for the next little bit. And I want you to imagine for a moment, it is not the year 2015, it is the year 30 AD. So we probably all need some cool-looking ancient Tevas or, you know, Chacos or Jesus boots, Jerusalem cruisers, this sort of thing. You know, I love Jerusalem cruisers. Isn't that awesome? Yeah, but you're living in the year 30 AD. You're living in Israel. We would really call it Roman Palestine because you are under the rule and authority of the Roman Empire. And in the Roman Empire, 10% of the people own 90% of the wealth. And when we talk about poverty in the United States, it's almost laughable compared to the poverty in ancient Israel. I mean, in ancient Israel, the question was, how am I going to be able to eat from day to day? Am I going to make it? Is my family going to be hungry today, or am I going to have a job to provide my family with the resources it needs? I mean, the poverty was extreme. And then imagine, you're worried about, am I going to be able to eat? And then a tax collector walks up to your door and says, pony up. And you can't pony up. So what do? You have one goat that provides the milk or the cheese or whatever else for your family, and the Roman tax collector says, great, we can sell that. I'm going to take it. Now you're really up a creek, aren't you? See why they hated the tax collectors so much? So you're living in Roman Palestine. It's 30 AD. And there in Roman Palestine, you are dirt poor, and you are one of three classes of workers. There were the tradesmen. This would be the category that Jesus fit into. These are your carpenters, stonemasons, metal workers. There were the fishermen. This would be the category the disciples fit into. Fishermen usually hung out in the middle part of Israel or northern part of Israel. They fished. They worked around the Sea of Galilee. This would be people like Peter and Andrew and James and John. And then there are the farmers. And that's pretty much the bulk of folks who were the workers in Roman Palestine. Now, if you're a farmer, that has a bit of a translation, cultural translation we need to make in our culture today. When you think about farming in our culture, typically, you get this picture of somebody living on 80 acres to 400 acres, little red silo, little red barn, two, you know, cows. Farmer comes out, overalls, you know, big hat, sort of, hey, let's drive the John Deere, this sort of thing, right? Because if you grew up in a city like me, that's kind of what you think about. If you didn't grow up in the city and lived on a farm, you're laughing at me right now. But get over that part. Now, if you're living in Roman Palestine and you're a farmer, the majority of you do not own any land. You're a day laborer. The Roman Empire would lease the land to the land barons, who are most often Roman citizens. Those Roman citizens would own huge tracts of land and then employ people as day laborers. Now, if you were Jewish and fortunate enough to be at the upper echelons of society, you would also get a tract of land, but usually it was smaller than that of the Roman citizens. If you were a day laborer, you would go to the marketplace each day, hoping beyond hope that somebody hired you for that day to have a job. And if you are a farmer, realize that this is an honorable profession. I mean, you can go back to the very first book in the Bible, Genesis. And you look at Genesis chapters 1 and 2, the first two chapters of the Bible, and what is it that God calls the people to do but care for the garden? So the rabbi said that farming was one of the most honorable professions you could have. You know, to go out and look for work in the marketplace early in the morning, this was an honorable thing to do because the scriptures say that idleness brings death. And you have to question even our culture today. If folks had a job, would we have some of the same issues that we do? So you go there, you hope to be hired each day, and realize to be a day laborer, you are actually treated pretty well. You were treated pretty well. You could expect a fair daily wage. And at the end of the day, you would be paid in cash right there on the spot. So it wasn't like, hey man, you got to wait for the 15th and the 30th, get the direct deposit paperwork in, hope it works out all the first time. If not, you got to wait a month. I'm sure some of you have experienced that. Yeah, no, it was you're going to get paid in cash for that day's work. You were going to be given lunch or dinner, depending on the hours that you worked, by the landowner. And it wasn't a company store type of thing where now we're going to take that out of your pay. It was, we're going to pay you lunch. And most often, the lunches were good, and they even had dessert. I mean, how do you go wrong with that? Chocolate chip cookies. Anyway, if your clothes were torn or destroyed in the process of your working, the landowner would provide you a new set of clothes at his expense. So to us, the idea of day labor sounds, I don't know about that. You were treated very well. In fact, the scriptures say, in Leviticus 19, do not hold back the wages of a hired man overnight. If you are the kind of employer who tried to hold back the wages of his workers, sorry, dude, you got to wait till the 15th, I guarantee you everybody in your town would be knocking at your door with rakes and shovels to take you to town. And the book of Deuteronomy says, do not take advantage of a hired man who is poor and needy, whether he is a brother Israelite or an alien, not like little green people, but somebody who's not part of the nation. Pay him before sunset because he's poor and counting on it. Otherwise, he may cry to the Lord against you, and you will be guilty of sin. So imagine this. You're a day laborer. You're a farmer. You go to the marketplace 6 o'clock in the morning because that's when the Jewish day starts, 6 o'clock in the morning, and you're hired. Yes. Family's going to eat tonight. Hires you at 6 o'clock in the morning. You go out, you start to work the land. And you notice something, some new people show up at 9 o'clock. Okay, that's all right. You know, landowner probably needed some more people, didn't think, you know, the job was so big, whatever. He needed to bring in some more people, that's fine. Noon, more people come out. I don't know about this. Are they going to have enough money to pay me when it's over? 3 o'clock. More people. Are you kidding me? I mean, either this guy can't manage his stuff or he's got bad workers or am I going to get paid? Is this? Well, I know what's going to happen. The 3 o'clock guy is not going to make as much money as I am. Or I know he's going to pay me more. This is going to be a great night. Can't wait. We're going to the Sizzler, whatever they used to say. 5 o'clock, 1 hour till the Jewish day is over. More people show up. You've got to be kidding me. These poor people, they're probably working for, you know, less than nothing. Boy, I feel bad for them. Except for when the day ends, Jesus in the parable says that the landowner calls the last people first. And he pays them how much? A day's wages, a denarius. And then he pays the 3 o'clock folks, and then the folks at noon, and then the folks at 9. And by this point, Jesus says the people are beginning to grumble. Now, I know this only happened in Jesus' culture. That never, ever happens in ours. It never, ever happens that somebody's standing in the same room as you, and you start a conversation where you say, I cannot seriously believe how much they pay Smith over there. Can you believe that? You've got to be kidding me. No way. Smith's way over. I should be making more money than that guy. Sorry, Smith, this really isn't about you. I just didn't have a more convenient name to use. Right? Beginning to grumble. But if we put bless his heart on the end of it, it's okay. Now he's not just teaching, he's meddling. And And Jesus says at the end of the parable, friend, I am not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for denarius? Didn't you agree to work for a day's wages? Now, when we read that parable, we say, but that's not fair. Why did they get more? But they did get more because they worked less, right? I'm a school teacher. Your children are safe at JCPS. Yeah, why did they get more? They worked less hours, but they got more money. What do we do with that? Now, Leviticus doesn't say anything about how much you pay people. It simply says, don't defraud the worker. Don't hold back his wages. Has that happened? Nope. You were offered a denarius. You were paid a denarius. Grace. Right? Because here's the deal, brothers and sisters. You could have, at the beginning of the day, in a culture where you've got no money, where you wonder if you're going to eat at night, you could have gotten paid nothing. You could have not had a job. But instead, you went out, somebody hired you, and sure, you might have worked longer. You might have even worked harder. And at the end of the day, you're questioning how much that person was paid. Nonetheless, you still got paid for a whole day. Your family can eat. Now, I don't care what Bible translation you read. That's the grace of God at work. You might complain that they got paid the same. You might even complain that, in your opinion, they got paid more. Who cares? You got paid. God provided for your needs. You could have been hungry. You could have sat idle. But God provided you with a job. Why do we miss out on seeing the grace of God's generosity in our lives? You may not have the job that you want. You might not get paid you want. The Smiths, we're not really talking about the Smiths, but you get the point. Somebody else might have something bigger or better or whatever, but that doesn't matter. God provided for you according to your needs. And for those whose needs haven't been met, why are we so concerned with our own needs rather than the needs of the ones who are truly without? You know, the issue is we tend to read the parable through the lens of fairness, not through the eyes of God's abundant generosity. Oh, wait, I know. This is the part where we're supposed to say Jesus thinks we should all make the same. No. This is the part where we recognize the grace of God and His provision in our lives. May not be what we think we need, but for the most part, hasn't God provided what we need? Here's a new perspective for you. We tend to read the parable thinking that we're the day laborer, right? Alarm clock goes off tomorrow morning. Working for the man. Why does Smith get paid more, even though we're not talking about Smith? Why do the Joneses have more money? Why don't I get this? It's not fair. We think the parable, we're the day laborer, but the issue is, folks, we're really the landowner. God's already provided you yours. You're managing it for Him. How well are you managing it? Let me invite the worship team to come on back forward. You've already received. Your job now is as a landowner to go to the marketplace to invite, to share, to be generous, to give, to offer people the opportunity to use their gifts and talents as God has given them to grow the harvest. You know, the problem in America, or a problem in America, is that we tend to see ourselves as these poor and unfairly compensated people. And in some cases, that is the truth. But in the majority of cases, it's not. What do you want more for? Another television? I got a Mazda, but he got a Maserati. Look at their house. It's bigger than mine. I mean, give me a break. You've got what you need, don't you? Well, I don't know. Well, then let's sit down and take a look at the budget. I mean, God provides abundantly and generously for each one of us. Yes, there are some people who have more. Yes, there are some people without. But perhaps if we looked at those who are without and considered how we could be generous with what we have, the world just might change, huh? Let's continue to worship this morning. You know, here's the hard part. There are exceptions, just as there are exceptions in any case. But compared to the rest of the world, the United States of America, with all of its problems, with all of its warts, with all of its challenges and its issues, we are among the richest people in the world. That's the truth. I mean, the deal is, for the most part, you've already gotten yours. You've already gotten yours. So how are you going to use it? You're a landowner. You're not a day laborer. How are you going to invest it? I think God gives us three gifts. He gives us time, He gives us talents, and He gives us treasures. How are you going to use all three? How will you invest them wisely? And I'm not saying let's just blow money for the sake of blowing money. I'm saying let's invest wisely in people and in areas that we can invest. I mean, one of the huge premises of this entire teaching series is I would love for your heart to be free from anger respective to this entire issue. Because here's the deal. If you're going to look at life from the perspective of it's fair or not fair, I guarantee you will remain an angry person. If you can say to yourself, you know what, I have what I need, it may not be what I want, but I have what I need, how can I use what I've been given? I guarantee you'll have more joy in your life. Brothers and sisters, the cultural fairy tale of fairness is exactly that. It's a fairy tale. It doesn't exist. I imagine it does in the kingdom to come, but as part of this world, if you're going to consistently be looking for fairness, and I'm not saying let's not argue for fair wages, I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying you're going to find yourself wanting, you're going to find yourself angry. But if you look at it from the perspective of God has generously and abundantly poured into your life, now how am I going to use it to the best of my ability, according to what God would have me do with my life? Your heart's going to be generous. Fairness is half-empty scarcity. And generosity is heart-filled abundance. Let me tell you a story. When Mandy and I left for Kentucky in 2002, I would have made pretty close to a six-figure salary that year. And I was 26 years old. I mean, I was doing good. And Mandy was even smarter and better looking and probably would have made more money. But you already knew that anyway. And so we got to our first church, and I remember I got my first paycheck, right? Going to get paid to do ministry. How cool is that? And I remember I got the paycheck, and I put it in my hands, and I kept looking at it. And I kept looking at it and looking at it and like, where's the other zero or zeros? And I just kept, and I'm thinking, there's like disappearing ink, or did they mess this up? Or no, I mean, that's what it was. And what was interesting is before we left for Kentucky, we would give our church maybe $80 a month. You know, we would find those Salvation Army kettles at Christmas. We would do a little bit. We would try to help a few people here and there, but we were not. I was not generous. Mandy was probably generous. I was not generous, right? Because I'm an accountant by nature. I look at it, scarcity. We've got scarce resources. I need and I want more, and I need to have those. I need to have those things. And then we had no money. And interestingly enough, then I could figure out how to tithe and how I could give and how I could help my neighbor and how I could provide for neighbors in our neighborhood who didn't have anything. Isn't that weird? I remember one time I went to the house. It was a trailer of a little lady who had become part of our congregation. And they had moved their trailer right near the church, and she and her family, they began to come to church, and she had gotten pneumonia, and I hadn't seen her for a few weeks, and I'd seen her in the hospital, but you know, now she was home, and so I wanted to stop by and make sure she was all right. And I stopped by, and we talked, and all of this kind of thing. And at the end of our visit, she hands this check to me, and I said, "Well, Miss Alice, what is this for?" And she said, "Well, this is my tithe check." And I said, "Miss Alice, you've just been in the hospital. I can't imagine what your bills are. You've got medicine. You know, you need to provide for your needs. Maybe it'd be okay this one time if you hang on to that check and put it to something you really need." And she looked at me, and she said, "Brother Ebel," because that's what they call you out in the sticks, is brother. She said, "Brother Ebel, look at all that God has provided me. Now you take this check, and you use it to somebody who really needs it, as God would have you do." And I said, she said, "I don't want to hear any more about it." And that crooked little old finger, I wasn't messing with her. I mean, what a life lesson for me. I came from abundance, I had abundance, and I wondered, am I going to make it? And here's who, by the world's definition, a woman who scarcely has, and yet her heart was overflowing with generosity and joy. I can't promise you you're going to have all that you want. I can't promise you a bigger paycheck. That's this new fad in the church called the prosperity gospel. And you know what? It's a lie. It's a lie. God doesn't care whether or not you're rich and famous. He cares about the condition of your heart. He cares whether or not you love Him and you love His people. He cares whether or not you're on a kingdom set of economics rather than some other different set of economics that promises you everything in the world and yet fails to deliver it. Over this teaching series, I want you to consider God's abundance in your life. How has God generously and graciously provided for you? Think about all the gifts God has given you. Your spouse, your kids, your family, a roof over your head, food in your pantry, transportation to get to and from work, time for entertainment, and the resources to do so. I mean, God provides in amazing and abundant and generous ways. And now out of the abundance that He's given you, how can you share it? How can you invest it? How can you use it? How can you grow the kingdom? There's all kinds of opportunities, whether it's down at 4th Avenue, getting involved with burrito riders, hosting a trunk at Trunk or Treat in a few weeks, providing money to the fishbowl, even a couple dollars to provide for those who need rent or electricity or whatever kind of assistance. There's all kinds of opportunities to be generous. There's opportunities in your workplace to be generous. There's opportunities in your neighborhood to be generous. Find them. And then be generous as God has been generous to you. Deal? Let's pray.